In the months that followed Camille's birth trauma debrief with Yolanda, she started to have more questions. Had she been right to put so much trust in this woman and an FBS?
Whereas before, we have an expression in French that says, je buvais ses paroles, like I would drink from her words, like I would be fed from her words. Whatever she would say and they would say with Emily, I would just take it as true.
Drink the Kool-Aid, that's how we say it in English.
Okay, yeah. Drink the Kool-Aid, I was drinking it.
She had come to realise that she wasn't the only mother to lose their child after following FBS. So why, in all the podcasts she had heard, had she not heard any woman regretting their decision to free birth after losing a baby? She wanted answers, but more than that, she wanted to hold FBS to account. Not just for herself, but for all the lost mothers.
Camille, hello!
Let me put you on full screen.
Yolanda agreed to do another birth trauma debrief with Camille, but now her rate had increased to $800 an hour. This time, Camille was less starstruck and was not afraid to ask Yolanda more difficult questions. She was also pregnant again.
And you're pregnant, you're 7 months pregnant now.
Yeah.
Camille told Yolanda that this time she wanted to give birth with midwives.
You know, it's just this idea that, yeah, it could also happen at birth accident. And if it happens, I want to make sure, you know, someone can help me.
Well, you can't make sure of that. You can't ever be sure of that. People die in the hospital. Babies die in the hospital.
Yeah.
Birthing mothers die in the hospital. So, I mean, that's just the truth of it. So this idea that the hospital can provide you a guarantee of security and safety, that the hospital can guarantee that your baby will survive, is not true. I've worked with many women whose babies have died in the hospital.
I agree with that, but I'm just saying with, like, bleeding to death. If my artery or something, like, and it's blood, you know, it's, that's where you go, right? If you're bleeding to death, you go to the hospital. Would you rather die, give free birthing, than going to the hospital?
I can't really answer that. I've never been in that situation where I felt that I have that choice as where I've been faced with that choice.
The call between Camille and Yolanda got increasingly tense.
Do you understand that by saying this, when you spend a year and a half listening to you and reading your book and listening to all of your content, do you understand that it could influence women not to go when they could have been or they could go in extreme cases like that? Because you were the only one I listened to, Yolanda, you and Emily, for a year and a half. And when I felt maybe the need to seek help, I didn't, because I had your voices in my head telling me everything was going to be okay, that it was a variation of normal.
I have never ever said to anyone in my books or any of my content, Camille, that there is any guarantee that everything will be okay. And if you only listened to me and Emily, and if you took my voice on as the voice of authority for you, then I am sorry, but that is not my responsibility. I am so sorry about your baby. I truly am. But I wrote a book, and I put a course out into the world that anyone who encounters it has the responsibility of experiencing it the way that they experience it. I don't think it's fair or right or moral to hold an author of a book responsible for the choices that someone else makes. People are responsible for their own decisions and their actions. And you could have read other books. You could have gone on other websites. I am so sorry about your experience, Camille, but you are a woman that I don't know who lives in France.
I think that you answered all of my questions, and I understand that you don't take any responsibility for what happened to me, right?
No, I don't have any personal responsibility for what happened to you, Camille.
Okay.
And I am so sorry about your son.
This summer, Emily posted on Instagram about how wild her pregnancy had been, listing all the prenatal care she had opted out of. Ultrasounds, blood tests, urine tests, not knowing her glucose levels, the position of the baby, that she had not taken any fetal heart tones. She wrote, quote, "At its core, wild pregnancy and free birth are about radical responsibility. I found more freedom in my pregnancies and births than I ever imagined, simply by allowing them to unfold on their own, free from medical management." Shortly after that post, Emily stopped putting personal updates on social media. Then, Emily posted again. "Dear Free Birth Society community, I am writing the hardest thing I've ever had to share, to endure, to live through. I recently gave birth to a beautiful baby, stillborn at 41 weeks of gestation. Our son, our baby, was not born alive.
Hi, women. Before we dive in today, I need to name something important. This episode, along with all episodes that you will hear until our winter break in mid-December, was recorded before my birth, prior to mid-August. Since then, our family has walked through the unimaginable. Our son was stillborn, and we are in deep mourning. As the shows air, you'll hear and see me pregnant, which now feels incredibly painful and weird, given that you are holding the sacred knowledge of what came after. So please forgive the dissonance. These stories still deserve to be shared and heard. We welcome your prayers.
When the news of Emily's stillbirth got out, it sent shockwaves through the FBS community. There were 15 teachers and students who were pregnant during the first MMI cohort. Emily's loss brought the number of full-term stillbirths or neonatal deaths to 3 out of 15 women in just 6 months. A lot of the women Shirin and I spoke to wondered if Emily's tragic loss might be a moment for FBS to change direction, to stop promoting such a radical version of free birth, which concerns even some pro-free birth advocates. But no, FBS was standing firm. They launched a new course called Grift. In September, Yolanda flew to visit Emily in North Carolina.
So good to be here. So beautiful here. We're looking out into this glorious emerald forest, Blue Ridge Mountains, and yeah, I'm so thrilled that I get to be here with Emily in person.
Sat together at Emily's house, they hosted their Grift workshop on how to become, quote, uncancelable.
So the main point here is that it's extremely difficult to speak what is true for us, to take risks, to branch out beyond the herd, to make money in radical ways, to withstand cancel culture, public scrutiny, criticism, and to be...
They use the opportunity to sell places on their second MMI course. After the backlash to the last MMI school, in which many students left or were kicked out, the next cohort was going to be smaller, more... intimate.
Last time we had 70 or so, and it was awesome, but Yeah, we just want more intimacy.
Dear Yolanda Norris-Clark, I'm a journalist at The Guardian and I'm writing to you because we're planning to publish a series of articles and podcasts about the Free Birth Society.
In November, we emailed Emily and Yolanda the findings of our investigation.
You've reached Emily. Leave a message.
Well, hi there, Emily. It's Lucy Osborne here. I'm a journalist at
The Guardian. We also invited them both for an interview.
Recently conducted an investigation.
Initially, neither of them responded. After our first article on FBS was published in November, we noticed that Instagram comments referring to our investigation were being deleted from the FBS page. Emily posted to her Instagram, quote, "This is what it means to be a disruptor. They will try to discredit you. They will lie about you. They will attempt to silence what they don't understand." She goes on to say, "Peddling propaganda on mainstream news channels is nothing new. There is nothing to defend. Mob mentality has captured those dwelling in darkness. We pray for them." Later, in an email replying to our request to comment, Emily said, quote, "Some of these allegations are false or defamatory." In a recent newsletter, Emily announced plans to translate The Complete Guide to Free Birth into more languages so it can be shared across the world. Despite everything, FBS isn't stopping. It's expanding. The women we met during our reporting have all tried to move forward with their lives.
She's going to be so quiet now, but she is so talkative. She doesn't stop when it's just her and mummy, right?
Nicole lives with her daughter in New Jersey. She's now 2 years old.
What's that? Oh, is that your horsey?
They do everything together.
A dear friend of mine has coined her my barnacle because she's just attached to me. We're everywhere together.
How is motherhood and how is it different to how you thought it would be when you were pregnant?
Well, I had high hopes for motherhood and it's kind of lived up to that. I will say it's one of the best experiences ever I've ever had, and it's so difficult and so challenging and so exhausting. And yet, I am so happy. She's incredible.
When you first set up, everything, we had nothing was here. It was all completely raw land. So everything that you see, we brought in. So, you know, when you first move into raw land.
Lauren now lives in a trailer on an acre of land in the Arizona desert. Journey's three younger siblings run around barefoot and show me their 35 animals, dogs, cats, ducks, goats, chickens, and turkeys.
Yeah, do you want to show us around?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you were going to show them the baby chickies.
They made the decision to move completely off-grid, with no address, after all the hate mail they received following Journey Moon's death.
Our five-year-old knows about her big sister, and she talks about her, and she asks about her, and we just try to honor her and remember her every chance we get.
Lauren showed me Journey's tiny urn. It has a hummingbird on it.
To our family, to my parents, too, hummingbirds will always represent Journey, because when we just had her and I was just kind of coming out of all that medication and everything, I looked out the hospital window and there's a little hummingbird hovering and just staring at us. I was like, Chris, I think that's Journey. And yeah, that just kind of became like our thing. So every once in a while, we don't have hummingbirds out here, but every once in a while you'll see a hummingbird just kind of fly by. It'll hover in front of the window. Scarlett has seen it. We go, hi, Journey. And so hummingbird is Journey.
I also saw a hummingbird get this close to my face. It's so close.
They'll come say hi to us, won't they? Yeah. So we say that's her checking in on us.
Camille recently gave birth to a healthy baby boy. She told us that it was the birth she always wanted for her son and for herself, and that it felt like a free birth of sorts, because even though it was at the hospital, there was no intervention and she felt respected, heard, and safe. Camille tells us that after Marlowe died, she received a message of love from him.
Where do you go when you want to feel close to Marlowe?
The beach. Yeah, we spread his ashes in the sea in front of our house. That was very powerful, beautiful. The name Marlowe has a signification with water and the beach, and we already chose it because of that reason. He's there. Whenever we walk on the beach, he's with us. I feel better and reassured that he's there, you know? His soul is there.
A year after Esau was born, Gabby gave birth to another baby boy, Emilio, in the car on the way to the hospital. An accidental free birth.
I'm just happy that both of my sons are happy and they're healthy and that they're here with me.
Esau is now 3. He loves it when Gabby sings to him or blows him bubbles in his wheelchair.
All I can do is just keep going on forward and healing and trying to give him the best life possible.
Adair is now the director of a summer camp for kids in Vermont. She lives in a cabin in the mountains with her partner and their son.
Every time I see a little girl who would be my daughter's age, which is quite a lot because I work with children, you know, I think about it all the time. I don't think there's a single day of my life where I don't think about what it would be like if she was here and if my son had his big sister, you know? I don't really expect that to ever change. And every milestone that goes by, I'll still be thinking about that. So, like, this is going to be a scar that's with me forever.
Emily Saldea and Yolanda Norris-Clark were both approached for comment about the issues raised in this series. Neither provided a substantive response. Emily has previously criticised other media coverage for unfairly depicting her as, quote, some manipulative cult leader, and said she does not care whether women free birth, but wants them to have the option to choose. Yolanda has previously said FBS is the most ethical kind of business you can run. Thank you for listening to The Birth Keepers. Reporting and presenting was by Shireen Carley and Lucy Osborne. The series producers were Elizabeth Cassin and Joshua Kelly. Music composition and sound design was by Rudy Zagadlo. The podcast artwork was by Laurie Avon. Additional reporting by Elizabeth Cassin, Olivia Lee, Joshua Kelly, Lucy Hoff, Tom Wall, Joseph Smith, and Philip McMahon. Analysis of FBS's financial records was by Stacey Ferris, forensic accountant and academic at Virginia Polytechnic Institute. Additional production by Lucy Hoff, Anais Delmer, Catherine Ball, George McDonough, and Phoebe McIndoe. The consulting producer was India Rakesson. The production managers were Jackie Timberlake, Ellie Cole, Anna Ochagavia. The commissioning editors were Nicole Jackson and Paul Lewis.
This is The Guardian.